The six traits are not a program, contrary to popular belief. They're not a curriculum either. They're a language for talking and thinking about writing. They are also a vision, a way of seeing writing the way a reader sees it. This is important because writing is the making of reading, and the more students can think like readers, the more successful their writing will be. So often I'm asked who invented the traits. The answer to that is simple. No one. Or everyone, if you like that answer better. The point is the traits have been a part of writing for as long as writing has been on Earth, and we're just waiting to be discovered, rather like stars in the sky or islands in a remote sea. Mathematicians didn't always appreciate the concept of zero, but that doesn't mean the concept didn't exist. It just hadn't been recognized yet. There has never been a time people wrote without ideas or without voice. We're pretty sure Shakespeare didn't write with a rubric in his hand. But who can doubt that he had ingenious word choice, compelling voice, or memorable sentence fluency? So the traits themselves are anything but new. What is new, however, is capturing these concepts in written form, in a rubric or a writing guide, a term I prefer because it sounds a little more user-friendly and less rigid and dictatorial. It seems just about everybody and his uncle wants credit for developing the six-trait model. But the truth is, the first six-trait writing guide was developed in Beaverton, Oregon, in 1984 by a little group of teachers looking for a better way to teach and assess writing. It was a true grassroots beginning. And although that first six-trait writing guide was used for Beaverton's district assessment, where it was an immediate roaring success, by the way, the driving force behind the development was not about testing at all. It was about communication. Those teachers were looking for a way to talk to students about writing and talk to parents about their children's work. The method for developing that first scoring guide was wonderfully simple, and it could be replicated for any form of performance assessment. It called for looking at authentic samples of student work, in this case writing, reading and ranking those samples, thousands of them, into three groups, beginning, developing, and strong, and then describing the reasons for ranking them that way. In effect, these teachers were asking, what makes writing work? And the answer to that question became the basis for the first six-trait writing guide. I was fortunate enough to work with this group, and as we sat around reading and reading and reading and laughing and tearing up and puzzling over students' work, we also took elaborate notes on why we ranked the papers as we did, and we discovered something interesting. We not only agreed on the rankings, but we agreed on the reasons behind them. Every single one of us was influenced by the same six qualities in the writing. Those six qualities or characteristics came to be known as the six traits. Ideas, the message and all the details that bring it to life. Organization, the overall design of the piece. Voice, the presence of the writer on the page. Word choice, the words and phrases a writer chooses to make meaning. Sentence fluency, the rhythm and flow of the language, how it plays to the ear, and conventions, the writer's attention to editorial detail. Now, for years, people have been saying English teachers can never agree on what good writing is. We had just proven them wrong. But we weren't thinking about that at the time. We were excited about giving a name to something called voice, because we had in mind this hypothetical student. Picture a student who has never spelled particularly well and whose punctuation is relatively arbitrary, almost, boy, I haven't used a period for a while, I better toss one in here. And maybe he's reluctant to write more than a page at a time because it's a struggle. And he knows what's going to happen anyway, that red ink is going to flow. Now, in most writing assessments, that student's work will be doomed. And that's because the very easiest thing to judge any piece of writing on is conventions. The conventions just pop out. And that's true for any reader, not just teachers. Now, that's not to say, mind you, that conventions aren't important. Conventions keep us from misreading. But let's face it, in the end, it's ideas and voice that rock the world. It's ideas and voice that get us to buy books. So, to get back to our hypothetical student, who exists in just about every classroom, actually, let's also suppose that he has an imagination that won't quit. And the kind of voice that comes from just telling it like it is, a natural storyteller's voice. A teacher wants instinctively to reward such things, and a sensitive teacher will do this with or without a rubric, of course. She'll say things like, "I couldn't stop laughing," or "I couldn't put this paper down." But then those conventions stare her in the eye, and it's hard not to reach for that red pen. The writing guide gives her permission to do what her heart tells her is right. It reminds her to keep a sense of balance, to see conventions as only 1/6 of the pie, and to look beneath faulty conventions to find the heart of the writing that is beating underneath. It reminds her to say, "Your ideas were so creative. I could picture you and your sister fighting for space in the back seat." Or, "My gosh, you put a lot of voice into this. You are right there in every line. This has your fingerprints all over it." And then she can add, "I have one small suggestion to help you show a reader when you're ending a sentence." And now, that little conventions lesson will be heard because, guess what? She's got the writer's attention. What I love more than anything about the six-trait model is that it gives a writer 6 shots at success. Just think about that. 6 educational targets to hit. This is critical because nothing, absolutely nothing on earth, is as motivational to writers as success. Writing is hard. And every time you feel you failed at it, whether that's true or it's just your perception, it gets harder to dig deep for the courage to put yourself on the line again. That courage comes from knowing someone out there just cannot wait to read what you have written. Writers don't write to show off their knowledge of commas and semicolons. They write to share their voice.